Welcome to the Creative Careers in Medicine podcast with your hosts, Dr. Amandeep Hansra, Dr. Dana Pung, and myself, Dr. Elise Putt. Join us as we talk to inspiring clinicians who have redefined their careers. Today I'm joined by Dr. Roy Mariathas. He is a GP and co-founder of Reggie. Reggie is an AI agent for primary care and other outpatient care settings. He talks a little bit about the fact that they may move beyond that as well. We explore Roy's journey and how he got to where he is today, as well as some important lessons that he's learned as a founder and on balancing personal and professional life as well. Hope you enjoy. Hi, Dr. Roy Mariathas. Welcome to the Creative Careers in Medicine podcast.
Thanks so much, Elise. And you pronounced my name correctly.
There's a little bit of a moment of panic there for me, but I'm glad.
Love it.
Roy, tell me about the roles that you are currently working. Give me a little bit of an introduction.
Sure. I spend most of my time in the startup, Reggie Health. I'm a co-founder. I do very ad hoc and sporadic telehealth work to keep the lights on. And I've also been fortunate enough to do a little bit of work with a large language model developer. And that is all that I can say about that.
Okay, interesting. So yeah, listeners may remember that we had you on a brief episode at Health in Vegas last year, and it sounds like things have changed up a little bit in your ratio of what you do since then.
Yeah, it has. I think the startup, we started to get some signals that the startup was taking off, and it was really hard to not focus on it. I think, Elise, I'm finding that I'm at this point where I'm starting to get obsessed about building this company and all that I can think about now. And I don't actually have much time for anything else, even to the point of like, Jesus, I better get the grass mowed because I just don't care. I care about my family. I care about my kids and the company. And that is it. I think that's a healthy thing, but I can also see that I'm starting to lose a little bit of balance in other areas of my life. It's weird. So yeah, there's definitely a transition in terms of work. I'm struggling to focus on things outside of the startup.
Yeah, amazing. I do want to take your focus away from the startup.
Yeah, of course.
Because I want
to
give a bit of a sense of how you got to where you are now. And then I'm excited to dive a bit deeper into Reggie and what you're doing there. Do you remember what drove you to medicine in the first place?
Yeah, I do. I think the overwhelming driver was to create impact and help people. Like, it's a bit cliche, but in the purest form, I genuinely wanted to help people. I knew that that help was at a broad scale, though. I didn't want to get stuck with one-to-one. And so that was a journey of discovery as I moved through my medical career. Yeah, that was one reason. I guess finances was another. I'm Sri Lankan. We migrated from a third world country. My parents were like semi-refugees. So a lot of Tamil Sri Lankans were migrating out of the country because of civil war. I were fortunate enough to be sponsored. So I think just growing up and seeing that makes you biased towards financial security. And that's not such a bad thing. It's an aspect. I got the marks for it. I knew that it was going to be a challenge. So intellectually, I wanted to do something that would be hard. That was another reason. And then I think the one thing that I regret that got beaten out of me fairly quickly once I started internship and residency was like, I would say I could capture it in ego or status or just like wanting to be recognized. It's definitely like the dark side of the drivers. And it's something that I look back and I'm like, oh, it's like a bit of a cringe factor. But I would be lying if I was to say that that wasn't part of the piece. And so I'm glad to say that while I started with that driver, it soon got bitten out of me, which is a good thing.
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like possibly it happens in reverse for some people as well. Like, I don't think I've actually seen this happen, but I remember thinking in medical school, like looking at all my peers and thinking, oh, you guys don't have the ego that all of these people that we're seeing in the hospital have. Like, what point along the way does that happen? People just develop these egos that I can't actually think now that the people that I went to medical school with have changed, and we are 8 years into working. So hopefully.
Yeah, I would say looking back at my journey, it was always there. It's just dormant. And then it starts to come out. It's almost like the Tamagotchi. It starts to get fed, right? And there's an environment for that to suddenly grow. And then it looks bigger and different and maybe monstrous, or it can look really cute and fluffy as well.
Well, I'm glad it's something that you feel has diminished over time for you. Can you tell me a bit about those junior years and your experience in medical school? Was medicine everything you thought it was going to be?
It was hard. I think I knew my style of learning. And even within school, I was like a bit of a class clown because I learned much better by myself. And that's changed as well. But in that stage of my life, I was really good at bookwork. And then I'd also learn by doing. Now, with a little bit more complexity in my life, I find that learning by doing and learning in context is the best, but I still value just getting by myself and absorbing content like a podcast. I think that was what made medicine hard. I found it really hard. And I was a bright student. I found that the ATAR or the HSC or whatever it was back then, it was easy and fun. There was just this environment of competitiveness and that was great. But once I got into med school, I don't know, I couldn't really handle the fact that I had to drive myself and that I had to work through that for the first time in my life. It might be because I'm also Sri Lankan and we get absolutely spoilt and my kids will definitely not grow up like that. For the first time, I kind of had to fend for myself and work stuff out in a major way. And I found that difficult. So my grades, I got in with a scholarship and then I scraped through. I think the only thing that grounded me was the fact that I cared for people and deeply cared. And I look back at that and I go, okay, that's the thing that really helped me to make sure that I know my stuff so that I can diagnose this patient correctly. Because if I care for this person and I don't know my stuff, then at some point I'm going to like do something really stupid or just not provide the best care. And so that was a driver. I found that clinically I functioned really well. So I was able to recognize patterns easily. So the work was fun. The hospital environment sucked. I hated the politics. Again, I was 23. So I did an undergraduate degree 5 years out and still just making sense of the world. It was my first full-time job. First time I earned above 25 to 30K a year doing some casual work alongside and really just struggled. I felt like I just scraped through and passed, if that makes sense. I took a time off. I think I was burning out. I tried to take a gap year in medicine in my second year. That was a point where I can see spikes of maybe this isn't the right path for me. I've come so far. Where do I go now? I was starting to ask those questions.
What did you do with that time out?
Yeah, what did I do? I ended up finishing residency and then I took 2 years. I'd locumed at a private hospital in Strathfield. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to de-skill. So there was a bunch of jobs that was just like writing up med charts in private hospitals. And I was like, my brain's just going to become one big fart if I do this for 2 years. So I worked in cardiothoracic step down. And so there's an agreement called CAFAT where patients from New Caledonia will have access to private hospital care and specialist care here in Australia. And so Strathfield Private was contracted to do cardiothoracic. So we're talking like bypass surgery, and it was fairly high acuity stuff. And then I would work in the step down ward. So once they came out of ICU, they would come onto the cardiac ward. It was pretty high acuity for what I thought a private hospital did at the time. And I'm aware that some private hospitals obviously are more resourced. That was good. I probably earned maybe like 100K a year. It helped keep the lights on. And again, just doing minimal work, I think I got paid like 110 bucks an hour and just worked enough to take my girlfriend at the time out for dates, you know, pay for board at home and get some savings. I wasn't really in the headspace of channeling my inner bee and working out investing for doctors. There definitely was a little bit of exploration into that. The other side of it was I signed up to do a master's in leadership at a theology college. It was like a spiritual exploration, you could say. I was doing a lot of volunteering at a church. I was like thinking about becoming a minister. And so this was the step towards that as well. The locum work was like part-time and then focusing on building up church services and a young adults group at the time. And this was 2014, 2015. And then I got married in 2016. So I was engaged and then just getting stuff ready to start a new life.
Was that the master's in leadership? Was that pretty full-time in terms of the commitment between the other church commitments and that as well?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I remember it was part-time. I wanted to do it full-time, but I just didn't have the finances. I knew I needed to save, but I really enjoyed that. If I could go back and I just had the time and the money, like I would have doubled down and sunk my teeth into that. But I was still doing a fair bit. So you could say I was like part-time doing masters and then full-time doing stuff with ministry work. So it's like it was a non-for-profit and I wasn't getting paid for it. Honestly, I've learned so much in that time about business. Like there's so much that I take away from the work that I did.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask actually, is was that more from the hands-on work that you did or from the studies or a bit of both? But has it also applied to leadership in a clinical setting or in your own roles?
Yeah. So from the Masters of Leadership, there was like a unit on critical thinking. And I think that was part of like postgraduate research and writing. It was like the first time I was challenged to question everything and have a healthy level of cynicism. It sounds stupid, but I hadn't been taught that. And I hadn't come to those conclusions myself, as I was like, if someone's there telling me something, I should just accept what they say. That was like super refreshing. And then started to learn, I guess, the theory around leadership. Has it made a difference? Probably not like this. Yeah, I think you lead by learning, just by doing and learning to lead and making mistakes and fixing them. That's probably the best school. But yeah, there were some frameworks that helped initially. And then I did a theology unit. And I think the takeaway from that was really worldview and how people see the world. And it taught me that there were lots of different views and people had very different worldviews, even within this church setting. It wasn't all one-sided. There were a number of worldviews that kind of came colliding together when people attended church. And so I think the healing part from that was that I finally understood why my parents thought differently to me. It just bridged this generational and cultural gap. Honestly, it was so healing to finally get it and go, okay, they're wearing a different set of glasses. I've grown up very differently and that's okay.
That's so interesting. It sounds like a lot of unintended consequences as well.
Yeah.
At that point in your life, were you planning on going back to clinical work? Because I know now you've completed GP training. Was that on your mind? Were you tossing up whether or not to go back? Or were you thinking you were going to go full time and become a minister, as you said?
I wasn't sure. I thought in my mind that I would at some point build a business. And so I figured that would be through healthcare, but I never wanted to go full-time with the ministry side of things. I always thought to myself that it was going to be half-half. That was just like an internal sense. Yeah. So I never like part-time, and part-time was the only thing that I was thinking about.
How did you end up going back to clinical work and doing GP training?
Yeah. Well, I got engaged. Like I fell in love, really. We've been married 8 years now. Yep. Got married in 2016. And yeah, we were dating for like 4 years. My wife was my high school sweetheart. And I think I started to have feelings for her quite early. And it was at the time when if you've got feelings or if you like someone a year below you or above you, that's like so taboo. And this was like 3 years. So there was 3 years difference. And I was like 18 and she was 15. I was like, oh, this doesn't sit well. I basically waited. And then when she was 19, I started dating. So yeah, I do love my wife dearly. And I knew that there needed to be like a level of stability and provision moving forward if I was to have a family and get married. So I chose GP primarily for that. I would say, yeah, that's probably like 75%. And the other 25%, I knew that I wanted some degree of flexibility. And if I was to go down the specialty route, my life was going to get eaten up for the next 10 years. And I just wouldn't be able to have the headspace or bandwidth to think about other things apart from working in a hospital. And I went down the GP route. Now, I should just say that those were the assumptions that I held. And it's best to talk to people that are in specialty land and doing hospital work. So not to put anyone off. I had assumptions and I made my decision based on those. Yeah.
And then after becoming a GP, did you do stuff part-time while you were doing your GP training, either with the ministry work or other ventures, or did you do it full-time and then sort of branch out after it?
No, I did GP full-time. I didn't want to waste too much time. I think the last 6 months I did medical education with GP Synergy at the time for 6 months, and then I worked clinically. I was still, I would say, maybe on a part-time, part to full-time basis doing like ministry work. And again, yeah, I can look back. I was just like read way too thin. It was really silly. I should have had better boundaries. I think I started to feel burnt out close to the end of 2020. So COVID was a little bit welcomed from that respect. I guess it forced me to just, all I had to do was like work and then chill.
Yeah. So I can see you've shifted a bit since then. You obviously mentioned that you've done telehealth work, and I think you were pretty early in the uptake of telehealth work from my understanding, as well as you're obviously now working on Reggie. Can you tell me a bit about the shifts that have happened over the last 5 years?
Yeah, of course. I'm happy to. So I worked clinically for 3 years post-fellowship. I fellowed in 2019, and then I stayed within clinical practice, working between 30 to 40 hours per week. The last face-to-face clinic that I joined, I was the first doctor on site, and it was like this great team. Looking back, I had unrealistic expectations of growth within a small business or a healthcare enterprise. It was a byproduct of my own desire for faster growth within a business or like outcomes. I just couldn't budge from that. When we got to a certain point, I was like, I want to see this. And then when I felt obstacles, I started to kick up a little bit of a fuss. It was also this point where I had enough headspace to look into and learn how a business ran and practice ran. And I think I pissed off the director at the time just by asking too many questions. I was getting really curious. There was this point where I had 1,000 patients on the books and I just wanted to scale my services, and I got challenged to make a compromise. I found that really, really hard. So to the point where I felt like I'd invested a lot of time in this business and energy. I thought it was going to be like the long-term thing. We'd even kind of move into the area because we just wanted to settle. Yeah, I found myself going like, I'm so freaking frustrated. I can't do this anymore. And I had to let it go. And that was really painful. I think it was the last little push just over the cliff. And so I spent 2 to 3 weeks wallowing in self-pity. You could say that I felt like really depressed, and it's like post-COVID as well, or during COVID that has happened. Just working really hard, feeling like I had a sense of responsibility to just help because it was COVID and I was a doctor. And then I just took 2 to 3 weeks off and then I hit reset. I ended up having a bit of like a spiritual experience at church, and it helped me to work out that I was carrying a lot from events that had happened in childhood. My mum had been quite unwell with breast cancer. She essentially was getting chemo and radiotherapy, and then she would rock straight up with full on side effects, and then she'd go to her casual job and continue to work because she had made a decision that she didn't want to lose a home. My dad was out of work because of his health. If you want to know more, you can look up the LinkedIn post, but that was a really tough time. I said to myself, the moment that I realized, I knew that I had really internalized this. Yeah, I'd said to myself, like, I'll never let this happen to my family. I started from my late teens, I made stable decisions because of that. I knew that I wasn't really living, but I didn't know why until that point. And so that was the experience. I kind of saw all of this. I understood it. I was helped to let it all go. It was really powerful, but also painful at the same time. I was 33 at the time. I finished high school at 18. I felt like things were going well. And then come 18, I just felt lost. And I'd felt lost for like 15 years. And so there was this degree of constraint that was there for 15 years. I think when suddenly you are helped to move beyond that and that constraint was removed, it was a bit of a slingshot moment for me. I felt like I'd been pulled back and 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 then suddenly just let go. So you can imagine like the momentum that I felt behind me when that happened. And so, yeah, I think like serendipitously, I'm obviously a person of faith, so I don't believe there's coincidences. But yeah, I found myself again, without knowing, at Eucalyptus, which is a D2C healthcare startup. I didn't know they were a startup. I had no idea what they were about, but I just knew that and had our first child. And so this would allow me to work from home, look after my baby, and just be a supportive dad and husband. And so, yeah, that's why I mainly picked that up. And then I also got onto OzSep. So the other side of it was like, okay, well, I want to keep exploring this business. Like, where do I learn? I need to do some sort of course. And OzSep was free. And so I signed up. And there was an application process. It was competitive. I just applied and the rest is history. I don't know if that answered your question, Elise. I feel like I'm rambling a lot.
No, it definitely answered my question. And it's very interesting. I really like that slingshot analogy. Love that. So good.
Yeah, I think people in digital health specifically, I've spoken to enough doctors and lawyers who have moved on from these professional conveyor belt careers. And not to shed bad light on the people that choose these careers and stay in them, because I think they have found the thing that they love doing. But for the rest of us, we kind of find ourselves not loving what we're doing. And then we have to work it out. I've noticed that people have this moment where it has to do with some sort of painful experience, whether it's in a hospital setting or like from an authority figure within their careers or some sort of like personal thing. And it's just too much to handle. Things crumble. They take some time. They might get counseling or psychological help, whatever. And then they start to explore and rebuild from a new lens. And you see like the energy that's behind these people that have just like this Aaron Brockovich, like get the hell out of my way because I'm on a mission. Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah, so good. When you started OzSep and started branching out really, did you have a clear business concept in mind, or were you just interested in learning more about, you talked about learning to run a business even when you're in the GP setting, sounding more like you were going to run a GP clinic or something along those lines. Did you have a clear concept of what you wanted to do at that stage?
I think I can articulate it clearer now, but at the time it was very unpolished. I basically wanted to set up an outsourced telehealth service that was providing chronic disease care, multidisciplinary chronic disease care to patients. And the business model was going to be through care plans. So that was where I started off with. Can we do what a practice nurse does for clinics that can't hire a whole practice nurse and deliver that through telehealth? Now, interestingly, that model is now tested and proven. And I think even just like a small vertical with Hinge Health in the US, they just do musculoskeletal, I think it's physiotherapy, and they deliver a program through telehealth. Yeah, they've seen remarkable things and that business is absolutely thriving. So it's definitely possible. It was very unpolished at the time. Very, very unpolished.
And can you tell me a bit about what Reggie is now? Has Reggie started from that initial concept and evolved over time? Or did you scrap the plan and start again? What are we doing now?
Of course. So I think I started off there. I realized that as a GP, I got some advice from some mentors. So Kevin, who was a McKinsey consultant and also in primary care, I spoke to him. So I got on a call with him, told him a little bit about what I was doing. And he just said, this isn't scalable. It's not a good business because it's not scalable. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Have to go back to the drawing board. So June 2022 was when I started OSEP. ChatGPT got released in December of that year. And so I had a magic aha moment with using ChatGPT. And I just knew that the world was never going to be the same. I can see around corners to an extent. And when I saw this technology, I was like, this is going to be the future. It's as big as the computer, the web, the smartphone. It's going to change the world. And it was really early. After I saw like more and more news about this, I think it was Bill Gates. Bill Gates was like, the world is never going to be the same. And I was like, if that guy thinks it's going to change the world, then I think I'm on the right track. And so I started the business. So I can tell you from the business front, I started thinking about how I can use generative AI to solve the problem that I was trying to solve. And essentially at the core of it, it was like, we want to do more with less. How do we deliver really good quality care, save money for the patient, or create revenue for the doctor and save time? And that's what I was working on. So the business pivoted to workflow automation, specifically around chronic disease management plans. There was already an existing business in Australia doing this, but they hadn't used Gen AI automation. And I had definitely didn't respect the importance of distribution. And so there were already integrations, existing partnerships that were in the market. And so I was fairly naive about those things. And you don't really understand that until you fall flat on your face and you're just not getting anywhere. And then you're like 3 months in, you're like, why isn't anything happening? It's because these market forces, they don't allow you to move forward. Finally, it clicked after a while. I realized that that wasn't really going to work. The other thing that happened was Liebird had been working up a partnership with Best Practice. And so BP is like the biggest EMR for primary care doctors. I was playing in the GP space, and unbeknownst to me, Liebird had been working up a deal with Best Practice. And so our product that I was working on was a downstream application of an AI scribe. And I think now, so we're 2025, 12 to 18 months on, it was a product feature on a roadmap for the scribes. Again, just naive like about that, and found myself kind of getting nowhere. And I had to pivot a little bit. Yeah, I did that. That was on the business front. On the personal front, I realized that I needed to start early on. I would say the second half of OSEP was like me working out, can I become a founder? What does that look like? What do founders do? Like, do they have families? Can they sustain families? Do they have kids? Do they not have kids? What do I need to put into my life to be a founder? And is that something that I want to do? Can I be a founder of a venture-backed company? And what do they look like? What kind of business can I run, essentially? Can I do the thing that I'm wanting to do or thinking about? Can my family sustain that? And can I sustain that? And then so the next 6 months really was just like about putting processes in. And honestly, at least if I could say one thing today, like the biggest learning right now is that my career has grown. We're all interested in career growth and career progression, but my career has grown so quickly. Now I'm scrambling growth on the personal front. Like, we have 3 kids. We are literally running business meetings week on week in order to organize our home. So things started to break in the best of ways. Things started to break because of what we had in our lives. And we quickly had to scramble and then try and rebuild almost these systems and processes on the personal front. My one piece of advice or the key takeaway would be, like, I think work on that personal front, because if you have a sense of what you might do something big in your life, at some point, most probably, you will make that happen. But the platform that you build in order to sustain that in your life is really, really important. So I'm talking about, how do you ensure that you stay healthy as a person? How do you ensure that the important relationships in your life remain important? Like your friends aren't forgotten and that support is still with you. How do you ensure that you don't become a mean person and a dickhead, essentially, because you think you're doing the best thing in the world now? All of these things are really, really important. I would say more important than you think. And so while there is this, like, there might be exploring happening, and if I was to bias on building those things into my life, if I could go back and talk to myself, I would say to do that. I wouldn't change anything. I would just be like, hey, just double down on learning how to build excellent routine. I'm talking like, you want to have mastery over these things. Do you have mastery over nutrition? Do you have mastery over sleep? Do you have mastery over exercise? Do you have mastery over your way that you do relationships? Not your relationships, you don't want to own someone, but how do you coordinate that in your life? Yeah, I think the personal operating system. Do you have mastery over your personal operating system? It's probably like the number one factor. And again, I'm unsure if I've answered your question.
Well, I feel like that's a very proactive approach to take that not all founders would take. My part of my question that I still don't feel 100% answered is around today's version
of
Reggie looks like. Yeah, and maybe the elevator pitch for a non-medical audience as well, if you can give that.
So at Reggie Health, we're building automations for non-clinical administration. Think about when a patient needs to come in to see a doctor during and afterwards, there's a number of things that happen in the background for that patient to see a doctor. And at a high level, that looks like intake. So how does a patient come in and get registered? And how does a practice know that the patient is needing to see a doctor and here to see a doctor? How does the doctor then capture what they've done for the patient and document that and prove that out to somebody that pays for the service? And then how do we capture those payments and collect those payments from the relevant people, whether that's the payer or insurer in Australia, that's mainly Medicare, could be like other sources, or it could be the patient that's paying. That's basically it. Yeah, I guess we're building automations. I think that would be for the non-medical person. For the medicos, like the medicos such health tech, we're building revenue cycle management 3.0. That is, workflow automations have existed for the revenue cycle for decades, but now with generative AI, we have the capabilities to start automating workflows or AI agents. And that allows us to reduce labor costs and provide a better patient experience and therefore improve sustainability. So yeah, we're providing AI agents for administrative staff in clinics. Amazing. Hopefully hospitals and enterprises and et cetera.
And where did the name Reggie come from?
Yeah, so Reggie comes from a concept. A good marketer told me that a name needs to have two syllables and end in a vowel. And then I also wanted to pay homage to like the Australian roots. And so Steve turns into Steve-O, Damien is Damo. And yeah, so Reggie was like a play on registrar. As we all know, registrar is like the mid-tier doctor within a team, but they do all the grunt work and they deliver essentially data points to a specialist. And the specialist then makes a decision and will ask the registrar to then go on and execute. And so it provided a little bit of a framework to think about generative AI and what I wanted to kind of build and see in the world. I just wanted to get the right information to the right people. I felt like the doctor was going to be the knowledge expert. Let's say this, what did the future look like? It would look like agents that would be delivering information and it would be like, yes, I agree. No, not enough context. Ask these questions and just be this like conversational piece. And so a good registrar just does the job, but like Reggie is short for bloody good registrar. And we all have, I think, a picture of a bloody good registrar is, and they're personable. They have the people skills and the empathy to draw out these insights from patients beyond just what the job requires. And then also when they're delivering the information, they're storytelling, they're narrating, they get the specialist excited about this presentation. They know to like maybe drop details on like the mundane, but maybe there's this important piece in one case that this specialist really loves. And so the registrar will really dive into the details about this case. And so they understand all of these dynamics. And I wanted to capture that with generative AI. And so therefore Reggie.
Cool. I didn't know your origin story for the name. That's really cool. Last thing that I want to ask before I ask you our final question. So you said at the start that you were sort of getting some signals that things were going to take off. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, the signals. After 12 months, we pivoted away from that like chronic disease workflow automation, looked at admin. Where did it start? I would say got some funding to go to the US. So Investment New South Wales provided 5K of funding to go to Vegas and be a part of health. Stephen Ma, who co-founded Google Maps, I'd been in the same physical space as him for the last 12 months, and we had just kept in touch that whole time. And so we decided to work together. So that was another spike. I started doing like business development. And then within, I think, 3.5 months, I had a partnership deal that was like a big distribution piece. Again, one of the huge VC question is, how are you going to differentiate your product? And distribution is key. And so we'd really worked on that. We had another large enterprise approach us for an EOI, spoke to like every major primary care clinic, very quickly got these meetings organically. I guess the only thing that stopped us from moving forward with these big deals was the fact that our product wasn't in the market yet. And so they just wanted to see a mature product and an integration. And that was another spike. Competitively, we saw the major cloud providers like Microsoft and AWS hand like large sums of money to some of these clinics to start building in-house. We saw the booking vendors want to build a similar thing. So it's just seeing like these early signs of market uptake. And then funding wise, I raised a family and friends round, and it was a small round, but I closed like 70K in a matter of a couple of weeks, which is, it's really quick for a raise. And my mom invested. My mom doesn't invest in anything. So I was able to convince my mom to hand over cash. That also was another signal. Does that kind of answer the question?
Definitely. Well, it's great that you're getting all of that good feedback and impetus in the right direction as well.
Yeah. Like the biggest thing is customers, and those customers are saying yes. And so I think that's the biggest marker that we're leaning into.
Amazing. Well, excited to see where it all goes. Our final question that we ask everyone on the show, I know that we've talked about a few different careers you've had so far, but our final question is, if you could do an alternate career in an alternate universe where you do not have to worry about money or your actual skill set in this universe, do you have a dream career?
Does the universe have the same problems that our world has?
It can have whatever you want.
Right.
You're really drawn to solve problems in every universe.
Yeah, I don't think I would change too much. I would look for the fastest method to solve a big problem and then go about learning how to do that. So yeah, would it be another industry? Maybe. Is it a researcher? Is it a politician? Is it a business person? Is it an actual clinician or leader of a health service? Or I don't know, but I don't think I would change the industry. I feel really good in my skin right now.
That's the best kind of answer. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and for everything you've shared, Roy.
Thanks, Elise. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Creative Careers in Medicine podcast, a proud member of the Talking Health Tech podcast network. We hope that we'll see you at our upcoming conference, which is taking place Saturday, August 23rd and Sunday, August 24th in Melbourne. We will be bringing together inspiring speakers from all walks of medicine and an equally inspiring audience that we'd love to have you as a part of. Follow us on socials and subscribe to our newsletter so you don't miss any announcements. The Creative Careers in Medicine podcast acknowledges the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognises the continuing connection to lands, water and community. We pay our respects to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and elders past, present, and emerging.